It's quite possible that that person remains at large in Kodiak.
Two Coast Guard members are found shot to death at the Kodiak Coast Guard base. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, April 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the impact today from the history of tuberculosis in Alaska.
We experienced probably the highest rates of TB in the early 20th century found anywhere in the world at the time.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
The Association of Alaska School Boards believes that all students should be proficient in reading, writing, and math by the time they finish the third grade. More information at aasb.org. This message sponsored by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
Two Coast Guard members assigned to Communications Station Kodiak were found dead this morning, the victims of gunshot wounds. The Coast Guard is not releasing many details, and the FBI is now investigating the deaths. KMXT's Jay Barrett has more.
Base Commander Captain Carl Moore said co-workers discovered the bodies when they arrived for work at the Communications Station about 3 miles from the main base between 7 and 8 a.m., He could not identify the two victims and wouldn't even reveal their genders until next of kin are notified. Moore also said it's unknown if the incident was a murder-suicide or a double homicide. He did say a suspect has not yet been identified.
It's quite possible that that person remains at large in Kodiak. We've been working closely with the locals and with the Coast Guard units in the area to ensure that all of our citizens remain safe and vigilant, and we encourage anybody to report any suspicious activity to local law enforcement agencies or to the Coast Guard Police Department.
At this time, Moore cannot say if the suspect was a civilian or military employee of the Coast Guard, but he did say the communication station is a very high security area.
The communication station has video cameras that look at the whole area, and the investigators are going to track down all leads.
Peterson Elementary School on the base went into lockdown after the incident, with some buses diverted to the high school downtown before they arrived at the school. Moore says the base itself is not on lockdown.
We have increased security patrols out. I'm not going to divulge what exactly we do, but we have additional Coast Guard Police Department members out around the base, and we are working with the school system. Peterson was in a lockdown, lock-in environment this morning, but we're working with the school board to work through that and how we're going to do that at the end of the day.
Since the crimes took place on federal property, the FBI is now in charge of the investigation. Coast Guard Base Kodiak is the largest in the nation, with about 2,000 military and civilian employees. In Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.
The Senate majority spent most of today closed off in discussions over changes that need to be made to the state's oil tax regime. The Finance Committee last night approved a tax bill without opposition among committee members, and that measure was scheduled for a vote on the floor this morning. But a brief caucus scheduled this morning stretched into several hours, with Senate President Gary Stevens emerging mid-afternoon to say the tax bill would be given back to the Rules Committee for more work.
The same issue we've always had is trying to get to a majority agreement out of a caucus of 16 people. And every time we move slightly one way, we add somebody and we lose somebody. And it's just a matter of the numbers, you know, trying to find a position that can be agreed to by a majority of the caucus.
The legislature is getting down to the closing days of this year's session, with a lot of decisions still left before members. The governor says he will call a special session if they don't take care of some of his priorities. Joining us from the Capitol in Juneau is APRN's Dave Donaldson. Hello, Dave.
Hi there.
Dave, is it correct to say that the oil tax changes are in trouble?
I would say that it's in trouble. Senator Stevens says that he cannot get an agreement there between enough members to go one way or the other to actually make a decision to put on the floor. But he is optimistic. He said he's not sending this thing to the Rules Committee to die back there. He says it's not an overwhelming problem, And he was actually anticipating getting it back on the floor, perhaps as perhaps even by Saturday sometime of the day. So, no, it's not a deathly problem. It's just in problem.
Well, what are the obstacles that have to be solved to avoid a special session?
Well, besides the tax thing, and actually the tax thing is a little bit aside from it, but there are a few bills. There's this issue of in-state gas. Do they want to have a bill, a line that runs from the North Slope down to South Central? That's a very high priority of the governor's and for the House. Scholarships, the governor's program, and he doesn't like the Senate version. I think that he's going to have to deal with the Senate version when he gets it. It should be on the floor later tonight, perhaps, and actually is kind of moving along to see how it gets to him. The budgets, they're on their way. They have meetings of the conference committee, and so those things are happening. I think that everything else is ready. They actually are in a position where they could avoid a special session if things just sort of turn out correctly.
Are members in agreement, and is the governor ready for a special session?
The governor's ready for it. As a matter of fact, he has been talking to people, sending around his staff to determine exactly what's going to be on the call for a special session. There will be added a few other bills that would make members' requirements and some of the things that would interest them that would be out there. And he's ready to do it. What he says is necessary is that if the Senate passes a tax bill, and then depending, of course, on whether they have the budgets and so forth done, he will call it, mainly just so that the House will have the opportunity to deal with that bill. You know, it's not foregone at this point, but it's happening.
Dave, do you think they would just stay on the job, or would they leave and come back?
I think that the way that I understand the plan right now is if there is a special session needed, they would go home for somewhere between 2 weeks and a month, come back. The idea is the governor would very much like to get this all done by time before June 1st, which is the filing deadline for the legislative races. It's when the campaigns actually kick off this year. He'd like to have it done by then. They also... he wants to give time, however, for consultants, economists, oil companies, and everybody else to feed into the House if there's a bill for them to be looking at. And there's no reason for the Senate to be sitting here while the House is having a bunch of hearings on bills that they've already passed. So the idea is that would be handled separately. Then they would come back in a matter of a couple of weeks to get the together stuff that has to be done and taken care of that. So we're looking at a period of time. My guess would be perhaps May 1st that they would come back here.
All right, Dave, thanks for that update.
My pleasure. See you later.
APRN's Dave Donaldson reporting from Juneau. Environmental groups are asking a federal appeals court to overturn a judge's decision that okayed the sale of petroleum leases in the Arctic Ocean off Alaska's northwest shore. The groups hope to stop a subsidiary of Royal Dutch Shell from moving forward with exploratory drilling this summer in the Chukchi Sea, though Earth Justice attorney Eric Graffy says the case is not likely to be decided by then. The groups gave notice today that they will ask the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to determine that federal regulators failed to follow environmental law before conducting Lease Sale 193 in the Chukchi in 2008. Federal Judge Ralph Beislein in February concluded that the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management had adequately considered the environmental effects of the sale. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a disappointing herring fishery closes in Sitka.
You know, it takes a certain amount of just blind faith that that when you go fishing, you'll catch some fish. And sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Alaska has the highest rate of tuberculosis in the country, more than double the national average. And many of the cases pop up in rural areas of the state where treating the disease is especially difficult. But health officials hope new tools for identifying and treating TB will help slowly bring down Alaska's high infection rate. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
3 years ago, Dr. Michael Cooper was a family practice doctor working in the remote northwest section of the state. Occasionally, he would see patients complaining of a persistent cough. They may also have been experiencing night sweats or weight loss, classic signs of tuberculosis, but
TB was rarely on my list of diagnoses when I would see a patient. I hate to admit that.
Last July, Dr. Cooper took a job managing Alaska's infectious disease program, and now working to lower the state's high rate of tuberculosis consumes at least half of his time on the job.
And as I look back now, I go through these patients some nights and I think, that patient could have had TB, and why didn't I at least do this? Why wasn't I even aware of it?
So Dr. Cooper is focusing part of his efforts on educating other doctors and nurses in Alaska about tuberculosis. That education includes understanding why the TB rate is so high in the state. Dr. Cooper says to get the answer, you have to look back to the early 1900s.
We experienced probably the highest rates of TB in the early 20th century found anywhere in the world at the time.
That's partly because Alaska natives had no natural resistance to the newly introduced disease.
So if you just imagine a nice cold winter and a packed house full of people and one person having picked up this brand new disease that they have no immunity against, and then spreading it, it just can spread like wildfire.
Some areas of Alaska had rates of TB up to 100 times higher than today. And the legacy of that history is that a large number of Alaskans are now latent carriers of the disease. That means they have no symptoms and they aren't contagious, but full-blown TB can flare up at any time. Each new case that does pop up triggers a rapid response from the state. Karen Martinick, a state nurse epidemiologist, occasionally flies to villages to limit the spread of the disease.
If we see a small isolated village, you know, usually they are accessible only by air or snow machine in the winter, and we have a case or two of active tuberculosis identified in that village, we can be quite confident that there's transmission going on.
Worldwide, TB is the second deadliest disease after HIV/AIDS. In the U.S., it doesn't usually kill people because it can be cured with pills, but the treatment is arduous. Patients have to take several pills a day for 6 to 9 months and endure difficult side effects. Because the disease is so contagious, each dose needs to be witnessed by a provider. Treating latent TB involves taking one pill a day for 9 months, but Martinick says patients don't always follow through.
I think that's one of the strategies that we've struggled with, particularly in Alaska, to get people to start and complete treatment for latent TB infection.
A much shorter and easier treatment course became available last year. Now patients can take 2 pills a week for 3 months. Patients are much more likely to complete the shorter treatment, and Martinick thinks the new drugs can have an impact on Alaska's TB rate.
If we can successfully complete treatment in more folks with latent TB infection, we would hope that we would ultimately see a reduction in TB case rates down the road.
Dr. Cooper says other new tools may also make a difference. New rapid TB tests can identify the disease in 24 hours. In the past, it could take 6 weeks. And every new TB case is now genotyped at a Centers for Disease Control lab. That means the DNA strain of each infection is identified and the treatment can be targeted to each case. All of those things combined give Dr. Cooper some hope Alaska can eventually bring down the TB rate. But until then, the disease will continue to take up a huge amount of his time.
The impact today is not nearly the scale as it was 50 and 60 and 70 years ago in Alaska, but it's still being felt. And the threat is always there that this little cluster and this little village, which we rush out and we contain and we get people on drugs and we do the investigation, if that doesn't happen quickly enough, if it doesn't happen thoroughly enough, it still has the potential to turn into a big infection very quickly.
The state hasn't had a big TB outbreak since 2006, and Dr. Cooper hopes he can help the state hold down the infection rate. With a sheepish smile, he says that will involve making sure more doctors in Alaska think about the possibility of TB when each new patient walks through their clinic door. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
What was poised to be the largest Sitka herring fishery in recent history has closed with less than half the quota caught. Managers made the announcement this morning to shut down the fishery for the year after just three openings. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
The Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery depends on timing. The fish must be caught when the roe is mature, but before the fish spawn. And this year, they spawned quickly. In three openings, seiners caught about 13,500 tons, less than half the total guideline harvest level of more than 28,800 tons. Still, Alaska Department of Fish and Game management biologist Dave Gordon says he has faith in the state's forecasting model.
You know, one thing that the model can't do is forecast surprises, and so this is really a surprise.
Early in their surveys, state managers saw what they considered a normal buildup of herring in all the usual places. They found some mature fish, but a lot of very immature fish whose eggs were not ready for harvest.
That changed very quickly, and we were anticipating that that might occur, where the more mature fish break away from the immature fish and hit the beach as the spawn, and that happened very quickly.
There were also gaps in the openings. The first two happened fairly rapidly, on March 31st and April 2nd. But then the fleet stood down for 5 days to allow the processors a chance to catch up.
The capacity is limited here for this fishery, and always has been, and I'm assuming always will be. It certainly would make it a lot easier if we could just harvest the whole quota in 2 or 3 days, and it would certainly lead to, you know, to get the better quality fish when they're available.
Only so many fish can be physically processed at one time, and with the end product headed for discerning gourmet markets in Japan, having them sit around waiting for processing could risk quality. ADF&G tracked 54.3 nautical miles of active spawn. Gordon says even though the fishery is over, there could still be more spawning. He says it's too early to explain exactly what happened this year and that managers will continue to conduct aerial surveys to monitor the spawn. The impact of catching less than half the quota became visible in Sitka this week. Some seine boats left even before the state announced the end of this year's fishery.
We count on this fishery this time of year to help kind of get the cash flow rolling in instead of rolling out.
That's Kelly Warren, who owns two tender vessels participating in this year's fishery, the Haukan and the Bainbridge. He says a lot of fish still came out of Sitka Sound this year, and that it's not the first time fishing has needed to stop before the guideline harvest level has been reached. Probably won't be the last either, he says. But what does that mean financially?
Well, for everybody, it's a little bit different. You know, I just bought a third boat this year, and it's down in the shipyard being worked on as we speak.
Warren says he was hopeful that they would catch the entire quota and that he would be able to get a jump start on fixing that third boat. But with less than half the expected fish caught, he says he'll take a financial hit, and some adjustments to plans for the rest of the year will have to be made. But he adds that sometimes that's just the way it goes.
You know, it takes a certain amount of just blind faith that when you go fishing, you'll catch some fish. And sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But it's what keeps us coming back.
And until the herring come back next year, Warren says he's off to the rest of his season. One vessel will tender for Southeast Salmon in June, and another one of his boats is heading down to Washington for sardines. With help from Robert Woolsey, I'm Ed Ronco in Sitka.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. And by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net.
Multiple federal agencies are planning to meet with Alaska's tribes on a government-to-government basis. Regional meetings are being planned all over the state, but the first one is in Bethel tomorrow at the Upete Cultural Center. It includes tribal delegates from the region's 56 villages. KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes has more.
The meetings are being led by the USDA Rural Development in Alaska, which is working with 9 other federal partners. Tiffany Zolkuski is the West Area Director for USDA Rural Development.
The purpose is to connect with tribal governments, you know, tribal representatives to talk about how our programs could better work in their communities to sort of achieve the goals that they're trying to accomplish for their communities.
The meetings are in response to a memorandum signed by President Obama in 2009. It directed federal agencies to engage in regular and meaningful consultation and collaboration with tribal officials. The meetings are supposed to be different than other regional conferences. Sokuski says they won't include formal consultations on specific rules or unfunded mandates. No testimony will be taken. Organizers want the flow of information to be two-way, on a government-to-government basis, between the agencies and the tribes.
It's designed to engage in conversation with tribal leaders about the priorities that they're seeing in their community, how programs may or may not have been implemented in their village for one reason or another, and really taking the opportunity to strengthen the relationship between the tribes and the federal government in how they work with one another.
Five USDA agencies will participate in the meetings, including Rural Development, the Farm Service Agency, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, the Forest Service, and the Food and Nutrition Service. Other federal agency partners attending include the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Small Business Administration, the Economic Development Administration, the Department of Energy, and the Denali Commission. Similar meetings will be held in Nome April 27th and in Ketchikan May 4th. Organizers plan to have meetings in other parts of the state after that. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
Governor Sean Parnell and several legislators took part in a rally in Juneau yesterday demanding justice for the late U.S. Senator Ted Stevens. The organizers want federal prosecutors held accountable for cutting corners in order to convict Stevens of ethics violations in 2008. KTOO's Casey Kelly was there and has this story.
What do you want?
Justice!
When do you want it?
Now!
Lawmakers from all political parties crowded onto the Capitol steps, while about 100 protesters stood on the sidewalk across the street. Many held signs or wore stickers saying justice for Ted. Rally organizer Ken Kelch, a retired Juneau Douglas High School teacher, recalled working as a campaign volunteer for Stevens.
The Juneau Steering Committee gathered more frequently in an election year. But if Ted was in town to address the legislature or to talk to Juneau constituents, he would make sure he gathered us all together for a meal and conversation. Friendship and respect for the Senator Stevens runs deep in the community of Juneau.
In 2008, a federal jury convicted Stevens of making false statements on financial disclosure forms just days before the longest-serving Republican in Senate history lost his race for re-election. Less than a year later, the conviction was voided and the indictment dismissed after the U.S. Justice Department uncovered prosecutorial misconduct. Stevens died in a plane crash in August 2010. Sally Smith works in the Juneau office of Senator Mark Begich, who defeated Stevens in the 2008 election. Smith read a statement praising Stevens' legacy and decrying the circumstances of his conviction.
There is no question that Senator Stevens' legacy of accomplishment for our state is enormous. So it is especially troubling that a person of his stature didn't get a fair hearing in our criminal justice system.
Begich is a co-sponsor of a bill introduced by Alaska's other senator, Lisa Murkowski, called the Fairness in Disclosure of Evidence Act of 2012. It would require prosecutors to turn over evidence that could help the defense, something the prosecution in Stevens' case failed to do. Governor Sean Parnell, wearing an incredible Hulk tie like the one favored by Stevens, all but blamed the government lawyer's wrongdoing for Stevens losing his Senate seat.
Our beloved senator was indicted. He was tried, convicted, and removed from the Senate under conditions that no one in our country should or will accept.
Juneau Representative Kathy Munoz said Stevens always worked in the best interest of Alaskans, and now it is time for Alaskans to work for him.
Thank you all for being here today to support Ted Stevens, to recognize his incredible legacy, and to hold federal prosecutors accountable. Justice must be done.
Another rally demanding justice for Ted Stevens was held last week in Anchorage. A 500-page report on the botched prosecution by an independent investigator found widespread concealment of evidence, but did not recommend charges against the prosecutors. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The Kobuk 440 gets underway tonight at 6 p.m. in Kotzebue. The sled dog race runs through six area villages, including Norvik, Ambler, and Kayana. The race is a qualifier for the Iditarod. 10 mushers are competing. Liz Moore is a Kobuk 440 board member and the official timekeeper for the event. She says mushers really appreciate the race.
Mushers have told us in the past, and it's still true today, that one of those great things about this race is it's the last race of the season. And really, we rely on our village checkpoints to make this race a success. So we have a lot of volunteers working really hard in the villages, and they are what make this race possible and make it really great. And they make this race very hospitable. Villagers get to spend time and interact with mushers when they're there in the community stopping.
There's 10 signed up this year. How does that compare to last year and years in the past?
Last year we had 17 mushers, and in the past, you know, a lot of our people have been involved with the race in the past. This is my third year. A lot of people in the past have said that it fluctuates from year to year, and one of the things that we've heard is that it's just so expensive. Everything related to dog mushing has gone up in prices just like everything else, and it's expensive to get out here because we're not on the road system. So we only had about 10 people sign up this year. So it's not abnormal, but we think it's related to the cost of coming out and attending the race.
And what are the trail conditions looking like?
Actually, it's sunny outside. It's a beautiful day. It's about 9 degrees outside. The communities heading towards the upper Kobuk are warmer than Kotzebue right now. So they're keeping an eye out for any melting water, any river water that's coming up. It sounds like there's some water outside of Kayana, but it looks like it's overflow. So basically right now it's springtime. Things are going to start breaking up, but the trail conditions are safe. The trails are marked by each checkpoint to make sure that mushers can get from point A to point B safely.
You can follow all the race action at kobuk440.com. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Ed Bronco in Sitka, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
And by
ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.